spoken. It was as though Seth, too, wasn't familiar with vocal cords or words, and so took pains to use those mechanisms in just the right way. The contrast between the two Seths couldn't have been more complete.
We are the voices who speak without tongues of our own. We are sources of that energy from which you come. We are creators, yet we have also been created. We seeded your universe as you seed other realities. We do not exist in your historical terms, nor have we known physical existence. Our joy created the exaltation from which your world comes. Our existence is such that communication must be made by others to you. Verbal symbols have no meaning for us. Our experience is not translatable. We hope our intent is. In the vast, infinite scope of consciousness, all is possible. There is meaning in each thought. We perceive your thoughts as lights. They form patterns.
Each syllable was carefully and separately pronounced.
Because of the difficulties of communication, it is nearly impossible for us to explain our reality. Know only that we exist. We send immeasurable vitality to you, and support all of those structures of consciousness with which you are familiar. You are never alone. We have always sent emissaries to you who understand your needs. Though you do not know us, we cherish you. Seth is a point of my reference in our reference. He is an ancient portion of us. We are separate, but united.
Long pause.
Always the spirit forms the flesh.
12:06 a.m. This was the end of the session. As usual, when Seth too speaks, the end was unannounced and came without any of the warmth and emotional exchange that often involves Seth, Jane, and me. Jane's eyes were heavy. For some few minutes, she had trouble keeping them open. She hadn't changed her position in her rocker for the duration of the delivery, and she'd experienced the usual cone effect. I'd had to ask for a word or two to be repeated when it had been obliterated by a burst of traffic noise. Session 589, August 4th, 1971, 9:04 p.m., Wednesday. We were ready for the session early this evening for a change. I told Jane I hoped Seth would discuss a dream she'd had last night. It involved the two of us and was very optimistic. I was sure that in symbolic terms it dealt with our work. Seth did analyze the dream at the end of the session, so that material is deleted from the dictation on his book. With the approach of 9 o'clock, Jane began to acquire a typical bearing. She became quiet as she sat waiting and started glancing sideways from lowered eyes. She seemed to be alert for a certain subjective signal. Then she told me Seth was around and that the session would begin in a moment. When she took her glasses off and placed them upon the coffee table before her, she was entranced. Her pace was quite slow at the beginning.
Now, we will continue. There are kinds of consciousness that cannot be deciphered in physical terms. The personality who originated the paragraphs you have just read is such a one. As mentioned, there is the same kind of connection between that personality and myself as the one that exists between Rupert and myself. But in your terms, Seth, too, is far further divorced from my reality than I am from Rupert's. You can imagine Seth, too, as a future portion of me, if you prefer, and yet far more is involved. I am myself using simple terms here to try and make these ideas clearer. In a trance state, Rupert can contact me. In a state in some ways similar to a trance, I can contact Seth too. We are related in ways quite difficult to explain, united in webs of consciousness. My reality includes then not only reincarnational identities, but also other gestalts of being that do not necessarily have any physical connections. The same applies to each reader of this book. The soul is open-ended, therefore. It is not a closed spiritual or psychic system. I have tried to show you that the soul is not a separate, apart from you thing. It is no more divorced from you than God is. There is no need to create a separate God who exists outside of your universe and separate from it, nor is there any need to think of a soul as some distant entity. God, or all that is intimately a part of you. His energy forms your identity, and your soul is a part of you in the same manner.
9:18.
My own reincarnational personalities, probable selves, and even Seth too, exist within me now as I exist within them. In your terms, Seth too is more advanced. In your terms, he is more alien, since he cannot relate to your physical existence as well as I do because of my background in it. Still, my experience enriches Seth too, and his experiences enrich me to the extent that I am able to perceive and translate them for my own use. In the same way, Rupert's personality is expanded through relationship with me, and I also gain through the experience, as even the best of teachers learns from each dimension of activity. In larger terms, my soul includes my reincarnational personalities, Seth too, and probable selves. I am as aware of my probable selves, incidentally, as I am of my reincarnational existences. Your concept of the soul is simply so limited. I am not really speaking in terms of group souls, though this interpretation can also be made. Each part of the soul contains the whole, a concept I am sure will startle you. As you become more aware of your own subjective reality, you will, therefore, become familiar with greater portions of your own soul. When you think of the soul as a closed system, you perceive it as such, and close off from yourself the knowledge of its greater creativity and characteristics.
9:27.
Seth, too, does represent what I will become to some extent, and in your terms, yet when I become what he is, he will be something different. In the same terms now only, Rupert may become what I am, but then I will be something far different. Each of you are involved in the same kind of relationships, whether or not you are aware of them. Though it seems to you that reincarnational existences involve past and future events, they are existences parallel or adjacent to your own present life and consciousness. Other aspects of your greater identity exist, relatively speaking, about or around these.
Jane was speaking intently as Seth, her eyes wide and very dark. She made a series of large circular motions in the air.
The answers to the nature of reality, the intimate knowledge of all that is that you all seek, is within your present experience. It will not be found outside of yourselves, but through an inner journey into yourself, through yourself, and through the world that you know. Give us a moment.
A 1 minute pause, eyes closed, at 9:32.
I was once a mother with 12 children, ignorant in terms of education, far from beautiful, particularly in later years, with a wild temper and raucous voice. This was around Jerusalem in the 6th century. The children had many fathers. I did my best to provide for them. My name was Marshabah. We lived wherever we could, squatting in doorways and finally all begging. Yet in that existence, physical life had a contrast, a sharpness greater than any I had known. A crust of bread was far more delicious to me than any piece of cake, however well frosted, had ever been in lives before. When my children laughed, I was overwhelmed with delight, and despite our privations, each morning was a triumphant surprise that we had not died in our sleep, that we had not succumbed to starvation. I chose that life deliberately, as each of you chose each of yours, and I did so because my previous lives had left me too blasé. I was too cushioned. I no longer focused with clarity upon the truly spectacular physical delights and experiences that Earth can provide. Though I yelled at my children and screamed sometimes in rage against the elements, I was struck through with the magnificence of existence and learned more about true spirituality than I ever did as a monk. This does not mean that poverty leads to truth, or that suffering is good for the soul. Many who shared those conditions with me learned little. It does mean that each of you choose those life conditions that you have for your own purpose, knowing ahead of time where your weaknesses and strengths lie.
Pause.
In the gestalt of my personality, as in your terms, I lived later, richer lives, that woman was alive again in me. As, for example, the child is alive in the adult and filled with gratitude, comparing later circumstances to the earlier existences. She urged me to use my advantages better. So in you, your various reincarnational existences in a large manner co-occur. Using the analogy of adulthood again, it is as if the child within you is a part of your own memory and experience, and yet in another way has left you, gone apart from you as if you are only one adult that the child turned into. So the people that I have been have gone their own way, and yet are a part of me and I of them. I am alive in Seth II's memory as a self from which he sprang. Yet the self I am now is not the self from which he sprang. Only your rigid ideas of time and consciousness make these statements seem strange to you. For in a larger context, again, I can remember Seth too. All of these connections, therefore, are open. All psychological events affect all others. You may take your break.
To me.
If you do not understand something clearly, mention it, because if you do not, then the reader will not.
Okay. 9:55. Jane had no images of the woman Seth had been discussing. She remembered how, in early sessions, Seth had talked about a minimum of 3 reincarnational existences for most entities, and how scandalized she'd been later when she began to realize that Seth had lived many lives. Now she finds that the idea of simultaneity of reincarnational lives is quite acceptable. This fits her emotional and intellectual temperament. When the sessions began, Jane was especially bothered by what she called the trite and popular ideas about reincarnation, mixed up as they were with ideas of good and evil, punishment, etc. I go along wholeheartedly with Seth's statement that reincarnation is as much a myth as a fact, she said now, referring to an ESP class session. In that session, for May 4, 1971, Seth said in part,
"So what you understand of reincarnation and of the time terms involved is a very simplified tale indeed. Reincarnation, in its own way, is also a parable. It seems very difficult for you to understand that you live in many realities and many centuries at one time."
10:22. Resume at a slow pace.
"All of existence and consciousness is interwoven. Only when you think of the soul as something different, separate, and therefore closed, are you led to consider a separate God, a personality that seems to be apart from creation. All that is a part of creation, but more than what creation is. There are pyramid gestalts of being impossible to describe, whose awareness includes knowledge and experience of what would seem to be, to you, a vast number of other realities. In the terms of which I am speaking for your benefit, their present might, for example, include the life and death of your planet in a moment of their time. Seth 2's existence is at the outside fringes of one such galaxy of consciousness.
Pause at 10:30.
When Seth 2 speaks, Rupert initially is aware of the following. His consciousness strains upward, following an inner psychic pathway, an energized funnel, until quite simply it can go no further. It seems to him then that his consciousness goes out of his body through an invisible pyramid whose open top stretches far up into space. Here he seems to make contact with impersonal symbols whose message is somehow automatically translated into words. That point actually represents a warp in dimensions, a place between systems that has far more to do with energy and psychological reality than it has to do with space, for space is meaningless. I am almost always present as a translator at such times. My knowledge of both realities is necessary for the communication.
Long pause.
Seth, too, is familiar with an entirely different set of symbols and meanings, so that in this case, two translations are being given, one by me and one by Rupert. Hopefully, certain concepts will be delivered in this way that could not be delivered otherwise. These minglings of reality and experience, these messages from one system to another, occur in various ways continually, emerging in your world in one guise or another as inspiration of many kinds. You are being helped, in other words. You are also using your own abilities, however, for your own characteristics largely determine the amount of help you receive. The symbolism apparent to Rupert when Seth 2 speaks works well, but outward is also inward, and so consciousness travels as far inward as it seems to him to go outward. Such contacts and knowledge are available to each individual. All that is speaks to all of its parts, not with sounds, trumpets, and fanfare from without, but communicates its messages through the living soul stuff of each consciousness. Now, if you want something on the dream, I suggest we end dictation for this evening. You may take a break, or I will begin the interpretation as you prefer.
10:45. You might as well begin.
Give us a good moment.
Pause. Seth then delivered two excellent pages explaining Jane's dream. The session ended at 11:05 p.m. Session 590, August 9, 1971, 10:05 p.m. Monday. The session began late this evening because Jane and I first attended a 25th wedding anniversary surprise party for a member of ESP class. The affair was a great success. At the supper table this evening, we had been speculating about the time Seth had given in connection with his life as a pope, both in the ESP class session for May 15, 1971, and the 588th session in this chapter. When I wondered if I was right in thinking it likely that Seth's papal incarnation took place in the 4th century, Jane said she got the year AD 325. This seemed like a confirmation. To our further surprise, Seth added to the data concerning that life in tonight's session.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
It was in the 300s.
Thank you.
A few extra notes for your own edification. Often during that time, and for some time afterward, the records are rather unreliable. They were doctored. Sometimes the name of one man would be given as a reign covering a span of years. The original man may have been assassinated, another taking his place, carrying on as if there had been no change as far as the populace was concerned. Poison was the usual method, and even those who suspected the truth would not dare speak out. The records would show one reign of one pope, but one, two, or even three different men may have filled the position. A change of policy is the clue in such cases. Vacillation. Now give us time.
Pause at 10:11.
There were also men called little popes, those in training of an ambitious nature and catered to. If they were seriously in the running, you see, the rewards would be great to their followers. These men, incidentally, were no worse particularly in their actions than the rest of the populace. Their positions simply gave them greater leeway. The dates 325 and 375 come to mind in connection with my own life at that time. Again, the names and dates have little meaning to me now. In that life I learned to understand the interplay between men and their ambitions, the gulf that often exists between ideals and practical action. You must also understand that politics was a legitimate hand of the church in those days, and a churchman was expected to be an excellent politician. I seem to have spent some time in a place that sounds like Caprina, also during that lifetime.
Long pause at 10:20.
A cousin or brother was important to me. He ended up in severe difficulties, caught in some smuggling business to the Spanish. There was at the time a secret group called Followers of the Motherhood of God. They were considered heretics, and several times petitions were given to me against them. This concerned the position of the Virgin within the dogma of the Church. Now we are finished with those notes, and you may take a break.
10:25. I knew he was doing that, Jane said, then added that she went along with it. Her pace had been rather slow, but picked up when she resumed at 10:32.
Now, we will resume dictation. You are not fated to dissolve into all that is. The aspects of your personality as you presently understand them will be retained. All that is the creator of individuality, not the means of its destruction. My own previous personalities are not dissolved into me any more than your past personalities. All are living and vital. All go their own way. Your future personalities are as real as your past ones. After a while, this will no longer concern you. Out of the reincarnational framework, there is no death as you think of it. My own frame of reference, however, is no longer focused on my reincarnational existences. I have turned my attention in other directions. Since all lives are simultaneous, all happening at once, then any separation is a psychological one. I exist as I am, while my reincarnational lives, in your terms, still exist. Yet now I am not concerned with them, but turn my concentration into other areas of activity.
10:41.
Personality changes whether it is within a body or outside of it, so you will change after death as you change before it. In those terms, it is ridiculous to insist upon remaining as you are now after death. It is the same as a child saying, I am going to grow up, but I am never going to change the ideas that I have now. The multidimensional qualities of the psyche allow it to experience an endless realm of dimensions. Experience in one dimension in no way negates existence in another. You have been trying to squeeze the soul into tight concepts of the nature of existence, making it follow your limited beliefs. The door to the soul is open, and it leads to all the dimensions of experience.
10:50.
If you think, however, that the self as you know it is the end or summation of yourself, then you also imagine your soul to be a limited entity bounded by its present ventures in one life alone, to be judged accordingly after death on the performance of a few paltry years. In many ways, this is a cozy concept, though to some it can be quite frightening with its connotations of eternal damnation. It is far too tidy an idea, however, to hint at the rich embellishments that are at the heart of divine creativity. The soul stands both within and without the fabric of physical life as you know it. You are not separated from the animals and the rest of existence by virtue of possessing an eternal inner consciousness. Such a consciousness is present within all living beings and in all forms. You may take your break.
10:55 p.m. This proved to be the end of the session. Session 591, August 11th, 1971. 9:03 p.m., Wednesday. Again, this was a short session. Jane and I had grown very used to living with Seth's production of his book. We had come to look forward to each development. But now, I almost don't want to hold the session, Jane said as we waited for 9 o'clock. It's a real funny feeling, almost nostalgic. I know that Seth's going to end his book soon, now, probably tonight, and I don't want it to happen, I guess. She'd mentioned such feelings occasionally before, since Seth began work on the last 2 chapters.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
Now, we will resume dictation.
Now Jane's pace was rather fast, her voice quiet.
I titled this chapter, A Goodbye and an Introduction. The goodbye is my own, since I am now finishing this book. The introduction applies to each reader, for I hope that you will now be able to meet yourself face to face with a greater understanding of who and what you are. I would like, therefore, to introduce you to yourself. You will not find yourself by running from teacher to teacher, from book to book. You will not meet yourself through following any particular specialized method of meditation. Only by looking quietly within the self that you know can your own reality be experienced, with those connections that exist between the present or immediate self and the inner identity that is multidimensional. There must be a willingness, an acquiescence, a desire. If you do not take the time to examine your own subjective states, then you cannot complain if so many answers seem to elude you. You cannot throw the burden of proof upon another, or expect a man or teacher to prove to you the validity of your own existence. Such a procedure is bound to lead you into one subjective trap after another. As you sit reading this book, the doorways within are open. You have only to experience the moment as you know it as fully as possible, as it exists physically within the room or outside in the streets of the city in which you live. Imagine the experience present in one moment of time over the globe, then try to appreciate the subjective experience of your own that exists in the moment and yet escapes it. And this multiplied by each living individual. This exercise alone will open your perceptions, increase your awareness, and automatically expand your appreciation of your own nature. The you who is capable of such expansion must be a far more creative and multidimensional personality than you earlier imagined. Many of the suggested small exercises given earlier in the book will also help you become acquainted with your own reality, will give you direct experience with the nature of your own soul or entity, and will put you in contact with those portions of your being from which your own vitality springs. You may or may not have your own encounters with past reincarnational selves or probable selves. You may or may not catch yourselves in the act of changing levels of consciousness. Certainly most of my readers, however, will have success with some of the suggested exercises. They are not difficult, and they are within the capabilities of all. Each reader, however, should in one way or another sense his own vitality in a way quite new to him, and find avenues of expansion opening within himself of which he was earlier unaware. The very nature of this book, the method of its creation and delivery in themselves should clearly point out the fact that human personality has far more abilities than those usually ascribed to it. By now you should understand that all personalities are not physically materialized. As this book was conceived and written by a non-physical personality, and then made physical, so do each of you have access to greater abilities and methods of communication than those usually accepted. I hope that in one way or another, this book of mine has served to give each of you an introduction to the inner multidimensional identity that is your own. And that, my dear friend, is the end of dictation, and the book is finished.
Excellent, Seth.
You may now take a break, a well-deserved one.
9:30. The end of the book seemed to come abruptly, even though we were prepared for it. Once out of trance, Jane again expressed her peculiar regret that Seth's book was done, even though this was what we'd been working for. "What's he going to do now?" she asked. "I can't really believe it's over, you know." "We'll just have to wait and see," I replied. We made various joking remarks about what would come next in the sessions, but I could see that Jane didn't really feel humorous. Actually, Seth's own book contained so many ideas for future sessions that our problem would be what to explore first, and we would have the unaccustomed opportunity to carry out these studies at our leisure. Finally, Jane told me, "I'm just trying to relax. He's got something for you, I think, about those biblical times, the crucifixion. The thing is, I know what Seth's going to start telling you, but it's confusing. It doesn't sound right." "Well, it's nice to know you haven't run out of words," I said. The following material is included because it supplements Seth's data in Chapter 21. After Seth began that chapter, Jane and I realized we could become quite interested in biblical history, but our time for learning had been brief. Resume at 9:50 at a slower pace.
Now, for your edification. Christ, the historical Christ, was not crucified. You will have to give me time here.
Pause.
He had no intention of dying in that manner. But others felt that to fulfill the prophecies in all ways, a crucifixion was a necessity. Christ did not take part in it.
Pause.
There was a conspiracy in which Judas played a role, an attempt to make a martyr out of Christ. The man chosen was drugged, hence the necessity of helping him carry the cross.
See Luke 23.
And he was told that he was the Christ. He believed that he was. He was one of those deluded, but he also himself believed that he, not the historical Christ, was to fulfill the prophecies. Mary came because she was full of sorrow for the man who believed he was her son. Out of compassion she was present. The group responsible wanted it to appear that one particular portion of the Jews had crucified Christ, and never dreamed that the whole Jewish people would be blamed.
Pause at 10:00.
This is difficult to explain and even for me to unravel. The tomb was empty because this same group carted the body away. Mary Magdalene did see Christ, however, immediately after.
See Matthew 28. Long pause.
Christ was a great psychic. He caused the wounds to appear then upon his own body, and appeared both physically and in out-of-body states to his followers. He tried, however, to explain what had happened and his position, but those who were not in on the conspiracy would not understand and misread his statements. Peter three times denied the Lord.
Matthew 26.
Saying he did not know him, because he recognized that that person was not Christ. The plea, "Peter, why hast thou forsaken me?" came from the man who believed he was Christ, the drugged version. Judas pointed out that man. He knew of the conspiracy and feared that the real Christ would be captured. Therefore, he handed over to the authorities a man known to be a self-styled Messiah, to save, not destroy, the life of the historical Christ.
10:05. James' pace had speeded up considerably by now.
Symbolically, however, the crucifixion idea itself embodied deep dilemmas and meanings of the human psyche, and so the crucifixion, per se, became a far greater reality than the actual physical events that occurred at the time. Only the deluded are in danger of, or capable of, such self-sacrifice, you see, or find it necessary. Only those still bound up in ideas of crime and punishment would be attracted to that kind of religious drama and find within it deep echoes of their own subjective feelings. Christ knew, however, clairvoyantly that these events in one way or another would occur, and the probable dramas that could result. The man involved could not be swerved from his subjective decision. He would be sacrificed to make the old Jewish prophecies come true, and he could not be dissuaded.
10:10.
In the Last Supper, when Christ said, "This is my body, and this is my blood," he meant to show that the Spirit was within all matter interconnected and yet apart. That his own Spirit was independent of his body, and also in his own way, to hint that he should no longer be identified with his body. For he knew the dead body would not be his own. This was all misunderstood. Christ then changed his mode of behavior, appearing quite often in out-of-body states to his followers.
See John 20:21, Matthew 28, Luke 24.
Before, he had not done this to that degree. He tried to tell them, however, that he was not dead, and they chose to take him symbolically.
A 1 minute pause.
His physical presence was no longer necessary, and was even an embarrassment under the circumstances. He simply willed himself out of it. Now you may take your break.
Thank you. It's very interesting. 10:17. "Wow," Jane said after she came out of trance. "Nobody'll like that." But I tried to relax and let it come out because I had so many questions about those times myself. I questioned Jane, but she hadn't retained any images, nor could she add to the material just given. The short delivery that follows answers some of the points we discussed at break. Resume at 10:28.
Now, he knew that without the wounds, they would not believe he was himself, because they were so convinced that he died with those wounds.
See John 20.
They were to be a method of identification, to be dispensed with when he explained the true circumstances. He ate to prove he was still alive, for example.
John 21, Luke 24, etc.
But they took this simply to mean that the Spirit could partake of food. They wanted to believe that he had been crucified and arisen. Now, I will end our session for the evening. I bid you a fond good evening.
All right. Thank you.
Tell Rupert there will be other books, and I thank you for your help, cooperation, and patience.
I've been glad to do it.
We will have a private session next time.
Okay, good night, and thank you. End at 10:30 p.m. In the last two chapters, Seth has answered just about all of the questions remaining on the list we had prepared originally for Chapter 20. A note. Beneath a larger agreement, there are many differences in the details of the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. For instance, in John 19, it is said that Christ carried his own cross. In Luke 23, Simon from Cyrene is named as carrying Christ's cross for him. Many complicated questions and reasons have been advanced in dealing with various aspects of the Gospels. Their possible foundation in oral tradition and older common literary or documentary sources, whether any of them embodies an eyewitness account of the life of Christ. It has been very recently claimed that Mark's was written only a few years after Christ's death, for example. Whether the Gospels should simply be regarded as expressing a single tradition, the fact and atmosphere of Christ, regardless of anything else, etc. With a good deal of anticipation and not a little nervousness, Jane now began to read Seth's book from page one. She was amazed. Seth Speaks by Jane Roberts. Copyrighted material. All rights reserved.
Appendix.
Seth devoted three full sessions and portions of two others to this appendix. It includes additional information on several topics already mentioned in the book proper, such as coordination points, biblical times and records, objects as symbols, reincarnation, and expansion of consciousness. Sessions 592 and 594 are particularly intriguing in that events occurring during the sessions highlighted and illustrated the dictated material. We also added portions of six other sessions. Five are class sessions. One is included because it is relevant to the discussion on afterlife organization in Chapter 9. Another contains an excellent description of true spirituality. In the remaining class excerpts, Seth answers questions that readers might also have in mind. These sessions also show Seth as he relates to others in personal contact. To an engineer, he gives an explanation of the pulsations of atoms, discusses mental health with a nurse, and aggression with a minister, all class members. The sixth presentation is from a session held for a student in which Seth mentioned the speakers for the first time. Session 592, August 23, 1971, 9:35 p.m., Monday. Since I knew so little about the time of Christ, it's taken me a while to do the extra reading necessary so that I could write appropriate session notes. Sue Watkins, a member of Jane's ESP class and our personal friend, has been very helpful. She has loaned me books on the period so that I could be sure of historical references. Jane and I were tired from our recent activities and might have missed the session, except that she didn't want to interrupt the rhythm we'd built up. Sue sat in as a witness. All of us expected an easygoing session, one that might touch upon current events involving the three of us, from a very ill feline, say, to our impromptu Friday evening reincarnational dramas. But we certainly didn't expect Seth to continue the material he'd begun in his book relating to biblical times.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
I should frighten you by saying Chapter 1, but I will not. And good evening to our friend here.
Sue.
You will shortly be able to read my book in its entirety.
To me.
I have a few notes for your edification.
All right. Seth's pace was rather fast.
Give us a moment. Now, the Essenes had deep roots in some of the mystery religions of the Greeks. Some of the Essenes set up schools that were not what they appeared to be. Subterfuge was used. There were various tests applied before an initiate could come close to the interior doctrines.
Pause.
There were other groups of Essenes, therefore, beside the one generally spoken of.
The Essene group generally known would be the Jewish sect in the Holy Land during the time of Christ, early in the first century. Historically, they are thought of as a peaceful group.
The Essenes, as they are known, were a surviving group from a larger and more ancient brotherhood. Some existed in Asia Minor. Efforts were made to infiltrate into national or group cultures. Certain basic ideas united the Essenes, therefore, though often they went by different names.
Pause.
There were three basic groups. The one generally thought of, an offshoot in Africa, and the Asia Minor group mentioned earlier. Little contact existed between these groups, however, and gradually the inner doctrines themselves showed important variations. The schools often pretended to be giving an education in other areas. The stranger would be kept in this outer group. Some attended such schools without ever knowing of the inner initiates and the more important work being carried on beneath the camouflage. Some of the members of the Zealots were originally Essenes. The Essenes predated them. John the Baptist was an Essene in all important ways, yet a man who steps forward in such a way automatically steps out of his group. And so did your friend, John.
Here, Seth humorously referred to my recent interest in John the Baptist. The Zealots were a much more aggressive, semi-political Jewish sect that also existed in the Holy Land early in the first century, as I discovered from my recent reading. 946.
There was some jealousy then from certain members of the Essenes at John's progress. At one time, John attempted to join various divergent groups together as one brotherhood, but he failed. The failure weighed heavily upon him. Fire is seldom gentle, and John the Baptist was as filled with fire as Paul. He was a far more gentle man, and yet, in his own way, as fanatical as any of the other main characters of that day. He was much more against what he was against than for what he was for. Christ, you see, was to deliver the message and John was to prepare the way for it. John had an alliance with a female cousin as a youth. He fled from the knowledge of this for the rest of his life, believing it sinful. Now these were men filled out like sails with the energy of their roles, yet they had to have the personality characteristics of their time. They had to appear as men, before Christ could proclaim himself as anything beyond the natural man. The entanglements were those that were necessary in the context of that religious drama. They were creative in that they bore within them the only seeds that could grow, in your terms, within that place and that time. Now, we do not have to be so formal. Book dictation is over.
Is it?
It is, indeed.
Okay.
You may ask me a question or take a break as you prefer.
We'll take the break, then. To Sue.
I talk to this one in the dream state often. I do not want to take up all your waking time besides.
9:56 to 10 o'clock.
Now, records were often falsified, completely doctored, and false records were often planted. Religion was politics. It implied sway and power over the masses. It was the business of the rulers to know in which direction the religious winds blew. There were deliberate falsifications of fact then and later. Some sects kept false records on purpose as blinds, so that if these were stolen, the robbers would think they had what they were after. In some cases, the falsified records have been found, the misrepresentations, while the true records behind them have not as yet been discovered.
Pause.
You had better remember in what session that information was given you.
I don't quite get what you mean.
Before too long, you may have reason to check upon what I have said, for records will appear that seem to contradict previous ones, as indeed they shall, and because of the reasons just given. The Essenes kept sets of records to confuse the Zealots, and another set to confuse the Romans, and they very carefully guarded the inner set from which all the facts were made. They were not as violent as the other groups, but they were as shrewd.
1006.
There were various marks made, however, to distinguish the various sets of records, true and false.
Jane paused as Seth, a hand to her eyes.
Now, I do not know whether or not we can get this through clearly. Give Rupert a piece of paper, and together we will see.
This session was being held in our living room. Jane sat in a rocker, facing Sue and me on the couch. Our long coffee table separated us. There was a light to Jane's left, and one lit beside me. Sue handed Jane a piece of paper and a pen, while I continued to take notes. This was the first time Jane had written anything while in trance. Actually, she was making some small diagrams or symbols, moving the pen quite deliberately, squinting down at the paper. Sue sat just opposite Jane, and I gestured for her to number the symbols when Jane laid the pen down and began to describe them for Seth. About a minute had passed. Two attempts were made at both the first and last signs.
Now, number one is simply a sign of a copy made, a distorted or doctored copy. The middle one was a mark made for a much less distorted copy, and the last mark was for an undoctored record. This looked more like a snake, a serpent.
Speaking emphatically for Seth, Jane pointed at the last symbol as she held the paper up for Sue and me to see. Concerning symbols, in 1947, scholars began acquiring the seven now famous Dead Sea Scrolls. They had been found in a cave situated above the usually dry Qumran Wadi, or riverbed, which leads to the Dead Sea a mile or so away. Excavations in the Judean desert nearby soon revealed the ruins of a monastery which had been occupied by a divergent Jewish group, for varying periods, between 180 BC and AD 68. The Qumran settlement was but 15 miles from Jerusalem and Bethlehem. It had been linked with the peaceful Essene sect by some authorities, while others just as strongly associate it with the more aggressive Zealots. Some weeks after this session, Jane and I were interested to read that the St. Mark's Isaiah scroll from the Qumran find contains marginal symbols that had still not been deciphered by the 1960s. This according to the last printing of the reference work we consulted. Some of the symbols, which were illustrated, bear more than a little resemblance to those Seth Jane drew, especially the last one.
It would be nearly impossible for anyone except one of the innermost circle to distinguish between some of the versions presented. These signs would not appear isolated, but in such a fashion that only those who knew how to look for them would find them. They were not blazed in gold on the title page. There were other clues also, certain other signs to be taken in conjunction with these that appeared within the texts.
1017.
Now, in some of these records, the dating, for example, would be just off enough so that only one well-versed would recognize a discrepancy. Some would include an obvious error. Those in the know would immediately recognize that the record was a fake. Some of the distorted records have been taken as fact, and it is a good joke to realize that the Vatican holds some of these. At the time, the Church believed that these records could harm it. In the case of these particular errors, the records instead could have helped the churchmen, but they did not have the sense to know the truth from the false. Now, you may take your break.
A gesture to Sue.
She is not used to my speaking so slowly.
10:20. Sue is used to hearing Seth speak more rapidly in ESP class, where tape recorders are used. I don't record Seth usually, but make direct verbatim notes, using my own kind of shorthand. This saves much time later when I type up the material. Still, Seth often speaks fast enough in our own sessions to keep me writing at top speed. No doubt Seth's amusement at the Vatican holding doctored records stems from his own brief tenure as Pope in one of his lives. Now Seth returned as Sue, and I began to discuss the drawings Jane had done in trance.
Since these are meaningless to Rupert, it is difficult to get the symbolism across to him clearly. They should be drawn much more tightly, for example, not so loosely. In actuality, the signs would appear as tightly concentrated symbols, and thicker in line.
10:24. At break, Jane told us she couldn't draw versions of the symbols based upon those she'd done in trance. I saw them quite clearly, mentally when I was doing them, she said. I don't see anything now, though. Looking at that last drawing, Jane did say that the serpent's tail was supposed to be represented by the lower loop. Resume at 10:45.
Now, give us a moment. In many cases, records were faithfully reproduced, but with the names changed to protect the innocent. Think of the language used presently by governments and diplomats. Think of the difference between what your government knows and what is told to the people. Often, when you hear a denial in such circumstances, you immediately leap to the correct conclusion that in a month or so, an affirmative answer will be given to the same question. Words, therefore, are often used to cover up as well as to reveal. Great efforts are taken so that knowledge is kept often from a majority and for a few. In biblical times, this was all the more true. Literary devices themselves served as formalized methods of seeming to indulge certain information while actually offering instead falsified data. No question in those days was answered directly, not by those who were at all literate. To answer a question directly meant that you were simple-minded and lacked any appreciation of the questioner's greater intelligence, for he seldom asked a question he really wanted answered. It was highly ritualized behavior, understood, however, in those terms. In other words, you do not understand how to translate the material properly from many of those records, even when the translations, per se, are correct. You would call whole pages of the Dead Sea Scrolls tremendous put-ons, since whole pages in literal terms are not true. But these were expected exaggerations and embellishments that preceded the giving of information.
10:55.
All professions, to one extent or another, had such fashions. The records meant life or death if they were discovered at the wrong time. Falsifications were often put in simply to lead any readers astray if the books fell in the wrong hands. Again, those in the know had no worries. They would not be misled. To them, the information was clear and the distortions obvious. Now, the scrolls are full of such protective distortions. The signs mentioned were but some of the clues used. They appeared in many guises, sometimes intertwined with signatures. These people were much given to codes. Even the arrangement of the letters upon the pages, as you think of pages, had their meanings. The weight or thickness of various strokes had meaning in terms of emphasis. There were even certain ways of handling a preceding word, so that the word would be a clue that the next word was false. Only those in the know would recognize this, of course, and the others would merrily digest the false information. Descriptions of important individuals were changed to ensure their safety, and backgrounds were often fictional for the same reason. These were life and death struggles. Some of the falsified records had poison on the manuscripts, deadly reading material indeed.
In spite of the humor, Seth Jane was very emphatic and serious in giving this material. The pace was fast. Pause at 11 o'clock.
Many of the men involved did lead double lives then, known in their villages by one name and in their brotherhoods by another. In some cases, their more mundane identities were never divulged but to a few. Later, when the Christians were being persecuted, there were many safeguards taken, particularly by those who believed they had a responsibility to live long enough to see the new creed find fertile ground. Often, Paul or Saul seemed to be where he was not, for example. Word would be sent out that he would travel to such and such a location, and stories planted there of his arrival, while instead he journeyed to an entirely different place. Now, you may take a break or end the session as you prefer.
We'll take the break, thank you. 11:05. Jane's pace had been fast enough through the delivery. Boy, he sure has energy, she said when she came out of trance. I felt like I was going right through the wall. Resume in a bantering manner at 11:15.
Now I will not keep you from your beauty sleep.
Thanks, I need it. No, I don't. I'm beautiful enough.
I suppose you are putting this into the session for the use of future historians.
No, I'm not. Though obviously I kept writing out of habit.
You should be getting some more reincarnational material on your own.
I feel that it's available now.
It is easily available. It will also open up greater activity in out-of-body experiences.
Well, that should be interesting.
I will let you all go.
To Sue.
I am glad you attended the session.
Sue, so am I.
You should be ready for some more experiences in probabilities. I must save my voice because we have a class session tomorrow night.
Humorously to me.
You do want to be able to hear me over there, don't you?
Sure, I usually do. Our apartment is divided by a long hall. When ESP class is held in the living room, I'm usually typing material in one of the rooms on the other side of the corridor. Sometimes I can hear Seth through the two closed doors. To Sue.
Again, I am glad you came, and a fond good night to you two.
Sue, thank you. Good night, Seth. Thank you very much. 11:20 p.m. Seth's reference to reincarnational material of my own concerned the reincarnational dramas that Jane, Sue, myself, and a few others have undertaken on our own, usually at our Friday night gatherings. This is a relatively new activity for us. It's been both surprising and very rewarding, and is an outgrowth of experiments Seth initiated in ESP class. Session 593, August 30th, 1971, 9:06 p.m., Monday. The regularly scheduled session for Wednesday, August 25th, was not held. This material came after the second break in this session. First, we received several pages about a very interesting development in Jane's psychic faculties, her growing ability to perceive a beneficial helper, as she has taken to calling it. There is much to be learned here. Earlier in the week, Jane received word that her editor wanted an introduction from her for Seth's book and an appendix. She wondered if the 592nd session would be suitable, and I told her that I thought Seth had planned it that way. She was surprised, then agreed. We decided to leave it entirely up to Seth to produce whatever material he wanted for the appendix. Jane's pace, as she continued this session at 10:30, was quite fast, animated, and emphatic.
Now, for our appendix. The great religions of the world all had their births near the major coordination points.
See Chapter 5.
In such localities, changes are apt to appear rapidly, for ideas and emotions are propelled into physical actuality with great vigor. Ideas sweep like fire among the people. The psychic atmosphere is fertile. creativity springs forth easily, and so such locations are not necessarily peaceful, although they would be the best ground in which peace could grow. Any ideas for good or bad become materialized with such strength, however, that the contradictory feelings of mankind are more apparent near coordination points. There are effects not as yet ascertained by your scientists that appear in such areas, effects that were known, however, at the time of Atlantis and also utilized by the Lumanians. In a strange manner, space puckers to an unobservable degree, as far as your instruments are concerned, near these coordination points. Some of my readers may be familiar with black and white holes in space that your scientists have recently discovered.
Some theoretical physicists have postulated recently that when the nuclear fires of very massive stars are finally extinguished, their enormous gravity causes them to collapse so completely that they literally squeeze themselves out of existence. A black hole is thus left in space, and surrounding matter can disappear into this. It's been further suggested that this vanishing matter can show up elsewhere, either in our universe or others, through white holes. There would be a flow of matter in our universe and also between universes, keeping things in balance.
These points have somewhat the same qualities. The electromagnetic aspects of thoughts and emotions, the animations, are drawn through points that can compare to miniature black holes. Here, their energy momentarily disappears from your system, is immeasurably accelerated, however, and returned through what you might call a miniature white hole, concentrated now, and highly directed back into your system of reality. This is only an analogy, but for working purposes, it is a fair enough one. There is, again, a wrinkling effect about these points, though not as yet observable to you, where space itself, it seems, yearns to disappear inside the first point. There are other distortions in physical laws. A few of these have been observed, but ignored as pertinent signs.
With gestures, eyes wide open.
The activities of atoms and molecules quicken as they approach these points, but the distance between the atoms and molecules remains the same. That is important.
Pause at 10:45.
These coordination points also serve to give your system additional sources of energy. The law of entropy does not apply, therefore. The coordination points are actually, then, sources of additional energy. They only open, however, when concentrations of energy build up within your system. I would like to make the idea clearer. A physical vehicle, a spaceship, for example, could never survive that kind of exit and re-entry from your system.
Long pause at 10:50. Jane's delivery had been very animated. A note. The second law of thermodynamics tells us that while the total energy in a closed system such as our universe remains constant, the amount of energy available for useful work is constantly decreasing. A mathematical factor that measures the unavailable energy is called entropy. Seth has insisted from the very beginning of our sessions that the law of entropy doesn't apply, and that there are no closed systems.
In Atlantis, there were those who utilized this knowledge, accelerating certain thoughts through concentration, emphasizing certain feelings so as to send them through these coordination points. Great stability was therefore achieved as far as roads, buildings, and the like were concerned. Such projects were carried out with great consideration for their position between various coordination points. This pocketing of space effect can be perceived in certain trance states.
Can Rupert do this? I didn't think Seth heard me. There was a burst of traffic noise through our open living room window just as I asked the question. The answer came easily, though.
This can be compared almost to a wadding up of air. Now, sit quietly with your eyes closed and try to ascertain the directional proximity of main or subordinate coordination points. Here are some aids to help you. With the intent in mind, you will find your inner vision inclining toward a particular direction.